This is the RDU on Stage podcast. I'm Lauren Van Hamert, your host, and on today's episode, we are talking about COVID-19. So what was originally programmed for this week's podcast was a feature on two really funny shows, the Judson Theater production of the female version of The Odd Couple, and an interview with Rebecca Fox and Rebecca Jackson Ortiz, the comedy duo behind The Rebecca Show. Both shows were postponed because of COVID-19. Last Thursday, I reached out to Fox and Jackson to do a follow-up interview on how this health crisis is going to affect our arts community, and that opened up a Pandora's box of interviews, which revealed to me just how layered this story actually is. So I am going to push out a series of podcast episodes this week to help unpack the many facets of how this health crisis is affecting our local performing artists, teaching artists, and theater companies. On this episode, we're going to start with the theater companies and how COVID-19 is going to affect their bottom line and what we as a community can do to help. That was an original composition by Al Riggs, performed by the cast of Bear Theater's production of Marasad, a show that was postponed after only two performances due to COVID-19. Bear Theater's production, along with the Temple Theater production of Steel Magnolias and the North Raleigh Arts and Creative Theater production of Freaky Friday, did open and perform as scheduled this weekend, only to close after Sunday's performances. Here's Tim Locklear, the artistic director at Interact, who spoke to me after Freaky Friday's preview performance.
If we have to close Freaky Friday and miss the production, of course that would hurt us financially, but more so being the director I am and seeing the artists put in all the hard work that's come forth, it would be detrimental to them for them not to see the work that they put into such a good production. You know, here we are at preview tonight and the audience loved it. I mean, they were laughing and you could tell that the actors needed that. They were at a point they needed the audience. So it would be heartbreaking for them to not be able to show all the work that they put in to this fun show. It's a family show. It's a show that people need to see during a time that what we're going through right now in this country.
Raleigh Little Theater's artistic director, Patrick Torres, echoes Locklear's sentiments about the emotional toll postponing a show has on its cast and crew. Raleigh Little Theater's family production of The Jungle Book, scheduled to open this weekend, was postponed, and Torres says the human factor, not to mention the financial impact on Raleigh Little Theater looking forward, is distressing.
A part of the payoff of all the hours of volunteerism is being able to share your story with the public, and, you know, it's a story that you care about, and that goes both for people on stage and backstage. So there's an amount of heartbreak that also is like involved with this that is also important, I guess, just to name. If we end up losing all of Jungle Book, which is one of the shows on our family series, that's going to come at a cost of about $48,000 probably. And then if this continues and we have to, you know, continue social distancing for the safety and health of our community, which we understand and we know why we're doing that. And, you know, as a community theater, we also care about the community very much. So we understand all that, but if we lose Raisin in the Sun, which is intended to open April 10th, now we're looking more along the lines of $150,000-ish. And then, of course, if we use lose Urinetown, which is our closing musical, then that number goes up well over $200,000. So, I mean, it just could compound very fast, you know, for us. And then, so that's the show-wise. And then we have teaching artists and classes, of course, that we teach. So the lost revenue on the classes is also, going to be, around $20,000 if we have to lose all the classes that we have for the remaining of the year. We've already lost about $5,000 in field trip revenue. So, you know, when you start to add it all together, I mean, if everything was canceled and doesn't have the opportunity to be rescheduled, I mean, you're probably looking at close to $300,000 hit on the company over the next few months. So that, you know, that's really significant as we continue to try to make programming happen.
Honest Pint Theater co-artistic directors David Henderson and Susanna Huff have been wrestling with the thought of canceling their upcoming production of Small Mouth Sounds, and says for them, the difficult decision to postpone the show came down to putting people first.
A lot of times people's experience with theater is they hear about a show, they buy a ticket, they get a program, the lights go down, they watch the show, the lights come up, they put their playbill in the recycling bin, and they walk out. They don't understand that, you know, 7, 8, 10, 12 plus weeks before they sat down, a lot of stuff has gone on and a lot of money has been spent and a lot of passion has been put into the story they're going to see. And I think having something like this to let people know, because we talk about what the cost of a pint is. You know, we have this infographic that we show our, you know, we have in the lobby at our shows to show people where we spend money on a show, what it costs to produce a show. And I think that this is another way of looking at cost, is there's also not just financial costs for producing a show. You know, there's there's the human capital that we have.
We should add that to the graphic, right? Yeah, you can't put a price tag on that.
You can't put a price tag on that. And I can't put a price tag on Susanna's health, my health, Ryan Brock's health, or any other actor's health that we're going to work with. But that is a consideration, right? Is we those are resources that we have. And a lot of times I don't think audiences, I'm not saying they don't realize, but they're not made to think about it as much as something like this podcast may make them realize, is that, oh, that is the process that you go through. Like, this is not an easy decision for Susanna or I to make, as far as postponing, because it's just not an easy decision, but it's the right decision. But all that went into making the decision is mind-numbing sometimes.
It's not quantitative, it's not tangible, you know.
I
think so the general public can't begin to fathom exactly what goes into producing a piece of theater, and that's okay, but it's the human factor, and that's the bottom line. You know, yes, it's financially devastating, but that's something you can recover from or move on from in your life, but your health is everything.
Several of the producers and artistic directors I spoke to compared this situation to 9/11. Huff said it was like watching an event like 9/11, but in slow motion. Temple Theater's producing artistic director Peggy Taphorn was working in New York post 9/11 and says back then there was a show must go on mentality, which was one of the factors that drove her decision to keep Temple's production of Steel Magnolias running as long as possible.
I was working on Broadway at the time, and we were shut down for 2 days. Now, this is not the same.
No.
But that was devastating.
Yes.
You know, that event, emotionally, the impact of it, we all still feel. Which is part of my reason for really wanting to carry on. Because our motto back then was, what do people need in a time of sort of mass hysteria and panic? That's when you need the arts more. You know, you need to congregate with other people, even if it's 100 people or less. to share this feelings and this amount of anxiety that we're all feeling barraged with on a daily basis, in a moment-to-moment basis. And if you can go somewhere and forget that for 2 hours, your body, your mind, your heart gets to take a little breath. And I definitely felt that during 9/11 working in New York. And I sort of feel that now.
Gavin Paymer, Temple's Marketing and Development Director, fears that many small arts organizations may not weather the storm.
We saw it happen in 2008 with the stock market crash. And Peggy was one of the few people that said, the Temple's not going to go away, we're going to fight. And because of her tenacity, we're still here 12 years later. But hundreds, almost thousands of arts organizations across the country in 2008 closed because they couldn't survive that drastic of an income, the loss of an income.
Theatre Raleigh's producing artistic director, Lauren Kennedy Brady, was also in New York during 9/11, as well as the musician's strike, and says in her professional career, she's never seen anything like this. Theatre Raleigh's production of Bud Not Buddy was canceled the day before it was set to open, and Brady says she is looking for alternative ways to deliver that production to an audience.
I was in New York during the musician strike, where when I was performing in Les Mis on Broadway and we missed a week of shows due to the strike, and I was also in New York post 9/11, and I can't really remember either of those feeling as, devastating to the performing arts in the same way that this feels like it could potentially be. It's something I've never really experienced before. So very, new and uncharted territory for all of us. And I want to do what is the most healthy and safe for the patrons. I am also very tied into the actors and the creatives and my production team and wanting them to have had the experience that they were looking for. We are very much investigating with the licensing house to get the rights to do a video that we would be able to share with our patrons. And the actors would get a chance to actually perform the show and have some closure.
But despite a recent announcement by one of the licensing agencies, Dramatist Play Service, the copyright issues surrounding live streaming a production are complicated. Here's Henderson.
It's funny, I was talking to dramatists yesterday, and they put out their thing, but in talking to them, even in their announcement, they talk about live streaming, as they said, look, we don't hold the rights to that. They do not control it. All of those remain with the authors and the authors' representatives. So if a company wants to live stream it, dramatists have said, look, we will, we'll work with you to do what we can to try to facilitate it. But ultimately, that decision doesn't lie with us. So somebody could say they want to live stream it and unfortunately be in direct violation of the copyright.
And Torres tells me that live streaming a production could incur additional costs for the theaters, monies the theaters just don't have right now.
When you sign a licensing agreement at the moment, for the large majority of shows, I'm going to say like 99.9% of the shows, you can't film anything, not even for an archival reason. And so we would have to go back and get that requirement lifted. I do think, at least on the professional level, that the licensing agents have been very good about that. What I don't know, and what I've got to look into this week, is if it's even possible on the amateur level to get that permission and to do that. And then if we do, there may be a cost to the company to try to subscribe or buy the software that would allow you to do that. Because my understanding at the moment in the professional realm is that the way that you get permission to do that is like similar to like if you rent a movie on Apple TV or anything like that, where you get a link. You have 48 hours after you start watching it to finish it, and the link expires after 2 weeks no matter what, because they don't want these performances living on in perpetuity. It's part of the reason they have the clause in the contract in the first place that you can't film anything. So it could be complicated, and it could come at a cost in a time where we don't want to have more expenses with potential revenue loss.
Another issue is that many of our theaters also rely on grants to offset their production and operating costs annually, and even that is up in the air, as Justice Theater Project's executive producer, Melissa Zeff, tells me.
If you've done the work and you've engaged professional artists and you pay them, what is the criteria for our granting organizations? Are we in breach of contract or have we fulfilled the majority of our contract? So no one knows yet about our grants, which is for us about a little more than a fourth of our income. And kudos to Man Bites Dog Theater Company for saying people that are recipients of their grants need to keep in touch, but they probably will not have their funds rescinded. That's a lot to ask of a grantor, and very, very generous that they'll support the work even if it isn't on the stage. So we all, that's one of the biggest questions. What's going to happen to these art groups that have a portion of their yearly operational support from all the wonderful grantors in this area?
So now what happens? Well, theaters are scrambling, as creative people do, to find alternative ways to deliver their programs and productions to the public, which Women's Theater Festival's executive director, Johanna Maynard Edwards, says may not be a bad thing.
As someone who cares about accessibility and who lives with a chronic illness, I think it's long overdue. And, you know, this is giving us the moment to say, oh yeah, all of these other things are possible. All these ways of engagement that we hadn't been using are possible. So I know that what's going to happen for our community in the short term is devastating. It's financially devastating. It's demoralizing. My heart is breaking. If I had a show that was supposed to open this weekend, I don't know that I could be as calm and collected as I am right now. But I don't have a show that goes into rehearsal till the end of April. So I have time to sit and breathe and take in information. But my heart's breaking for the Rebeccas and all the people who had to make really tough decisions really fast. But in the long run, I think this is going to be great for theater. I think that this is going to open up pathways of engagement that we haven't explored before. And when we see how well they can work, I think they're going to stay open, and it's going to make theater more accessible forever.
Cape Fear Regional Theater rolled out their first virtual theater camp today, and Melissa Borden says it went so well, it's going to be a regular thing.
We already had a day camp planned for today because in Cumberland County, it's a teacher work day. So whenever there's a holiday or a teacher work day here in the county, we provide a day camp for over 40 children. And because everything happened, we quickly had an emergency meeting on Saturday night, and we're like, what are we going to do? We have to still, you know, we want to still provide something for our community as quickly as we can. So we just figured out a fast way to get all the information pushed out to the parents. We had a packet, an enrichment gift bag that parents lined up in the parking lot in their cars to pick up this morning so that they could go home with it. And inside had the crafts that we were going to do for the day. It had just full of enrichment stuff. So when we started at 9:30, we just went full force. We condensed a full 6-hour day down into a 4-hour day. And we still included as much as we could, which included teaching choreography to a song from The Little Mermaid. We did games of charades. We did limbo and all different kinds of enrichment games, as much as we could pack in. And it turned out to be fantastic. And a lot of parents really enjoyed the fact that we were able to figure out an alternative. And actually, some of the parents were in the background doing a lot of the stuff with us today, too. So that was really fun to see the families participating as well.
I think you guys are the first theater to mobilize so quickly and put together virtual learning in this way. So what did you guys learn from this experience, from doing it?
I think we all went into it a little bit hesitant, not sure what the reaction was going to be on both sides. And what we found out is that it really works, that it was much more interactive and fun than I think any of us thought it was going to be. We were having a blast. The kids were interacting and talking, and then the parents were joining in. It was a lot of unexpected things that happened that we were just thrilled about. Again, we weren't sure if any of this was going to work. And it ended up being absolutely fantastic. And now we've also implemented from 3 to 4 o'clock every day during the week. We're going to have a different musical theater professional who's going to do the same thing. We're going to do a live stream every single day from 3 to 4, starting tomorrow, of teaching something, and it's going to be for the entire family to enjoy.
At this time, the theater producers tell me they need your support and money, and that no matter how big or small the donation, every penny counts.
The support that we get from patrons and audience members goes a long way throughout the year, and it's at times like this where that support becomes paramount.
Come see the shows after all this has come over. Fill the seats. Let us have sellouts. That would help us recoup anything that is lost. Sign up for the classes. Camps are coming up this summer. Let's fill those. That will help.
We employ lots of independent contractors for classes, and they make their money by teaching theater classes for us. And so even if we postpone a class, they are out revenue because they only get paid if that class happens. Even if it's postponed for 2 weeks or a month, then money that they were counting on is no longer available. So supporting your local artists and people that you know who are losing revenue because of all the cancellations is also helpful. Kind of on the other side of this whole thing, I think just, you know, making sure that you continue to be a patron of local theater companies and local artists, and that you come and really support our work by attending and being present. And then for us, it's always important to take the time to volunteer and to just help us through it. You know, there are ways that we can always use people's expertise, especially in times like this, to just help us navigate the waters that will potentially be really, you know, rough as we come out of this. So even if people don't think, well, I can't sew, I can't do carpentry, you know, well, like, if you have experience with, like, HR, or if you have experience with data entry, or you're willing to get on the phone and make calls, you know, like, that would all be also very helpful, you know, alongside of any monetary donation you can make.
I think it's as simple as if you were going to see a show, go ahead and donate that $25 or that $35 or even the $10, whatever the ticket price was. Don't worry about the tax. Don't worry about the handling fees, because those don't apply anymore. So go ahead and really contemplatively do small gives to all the different things you would have been doing if that organization is a nonprofit or an arts group that had to cancel the event, but it was something you were going to go see, like Not Bud, Not Buddy at Theater Raleigh, or the stage reading last night for $10 at Justice Theater. Because we're all still paying our monthly bills, and we still are going forward with all our planning. And we had to, I can't imagine the theaters, and I'm very theater centered, I apologize, but I can't imagine people that have high rents and light bills and all the bills that Justice Theater doesn't have. We pay people. So if you donate to us, the majority of your money is going to go back to people. But just as importantly, all those other art groups have beautiful facilities, or had rented a facility specifically for their show. They still probably have to fulfill that obligation. So the theaters are going to spend the money. The patrons aren't going to be able to come. So yes, the solution is for everyone to still support the organizations that they were supporting otherwise, even if you don't get to see a show.
We're all in it together, and we'll all get through it together. And I keep saying to myself, on the other side, people are hopefully going to be rushing out of their self-quarantine and their houses to experience humanity again and desperately need to be entertained and to be around their fellow man. So that gives me hope.
I know how stressful this time is for all the theater producers who took time out to chat with me over the last few days. And I want to thank each and every one of them for helping me tell this story and shine a spotlight on just how big this crisis is for our local arts community. I'll put a list of local artist relief organizations in Raleigh, Durham, and Chapel Hill, as well as links to all the theater companies mentioned on this episode in the episode notes. If you like what you've heard today, please consider subscribing to this podcast. Follow us on social media at RDU on Stage or visit us online at www.rduonstage.com. Until next time, stay safe and healthy and support your local theaters.